Good morning. So glad that you're here. Join us bright and early day in Denver. I want to, as an initial caveat, I want to say that I'm going to be giving you more of a broader overview, and I erred on the side of having more slides than less, not that I'm going to go over all of them, but after you leave the room, you'll be able to have this information. So that's just a little bit of the caveat. But I want to start out by saying that we have had an unprecedented opportunity to address environmental justice under the Obama administration. And we still have that opportunity. And it's critically important that we think very deliberatively, very creatively, thinking outside the box of how we can merge related interests, such as environment, such as public health, to take advantage of all the capacity which does exist. And I always like to start out with the words from the bosses. And this slide represents a meeting, an unprecedented meeting that was held last month, called by the White House to reinvigorate the Interagency Working Group on Environmental Justice at all levels with the principals. And in this particular slide, it represents our EPA administrator saying that, first of all, we recognize that the challenges of the environmental issues and public health issues in low-income communities, communities of color, indigenous populations, need capacity, need help, and we need to bring in the capacity not just of EPA but all of the federal agencies. So I want to ground us in that premise because we have the word from the top, from Obama on down. The second thing I want to do, kind of as a prelude of how I'm going to cover my little presentation today, is think of an architecture. At least we can start the conversation for what we all want, which is healthy, sustainable communities. And historically, environmental justice has really been about, in the initial stages, about reducing pollution of our land, air, and water. But there's been an important recognition that not only do we want to stop the bad, but we want to start giving the good. And we want to have equitable distribution of the resources and the capacity which relate to our health, our environment, our economy. And that's an important transition that really came about with the Obama administration. And then secondly, what I want to do is kind of tee up for conversation a way to start this alignment process. And the first is, again, thinking it in terms of an environmental justice / public health prevention model, because public health brings so much to the table that we really haven't tapped into so far. And it's important to think of capacity not just as dollars. It's not just a $25,000 environmental justice grant from the Office of Environmental Justice. Capacity is funding. It could be grants. It could be technical or cooperative agreements. It's also training. It's also technical assistance. It's also access to data. And in each of these categories, there's an amazing infusion of capacity. We just need to be thinking how we can tap into that. And then the third part is that there are important, again, unprecedented policy opportunities that are underway, and I'll highlight a few, that it's not about capacity per se, but it's a seat at the table. And a seat at the table is a huge opportunity to have an influence, so we need to be mindful of that. So having said that, again, I just kind of want to lay the foundation of this notion of what would an environmental justice and public health prevention paradigm look like? I want to ask, how many of you in the room consider yourselves to be primarily public health advocates? Okay. And how many of you kind of more operate in the field of environmental justice? Okay, good. Well, it's a great mix because that's where we want to try to have this intersection. And in the public health parlance, primary prevention is basically the prevention mode. We want to keep bad things from happening, whether it's disease or whether it's pollution. And in the environmental justice perspective, again, going historically, there's great icons in the audience, such as Vince, toxic use reduction and pollution prevention. In terms of secondary prevention from a public health perspective, it's, well, the disease is there, you haven't really detected it, what can we do about it to make it less? And that's where within the environmental justice arena some ongoing activities could be rulemaking, setting the standards that are going to reduce the pollution to the point of hopefully eliminating it. How do we deal with particular facilities in your community in terms of the permitting process? And then you have the tertiary prevention concept. You've got the disease, you know about it. How do we make it better? How do we limit the conditions of the disease and disabilities? How do we reduce the severity, and how do we try to make it better? And again, that's where, from an administrative perspective, you've got enforcement and contaminated site response. So what I'm going to do today is, you know, put on your seatbelts now because we're going to go really fast through three examples in each of these areas. And like I said, I have more details in the slides. We'll be available afterwards to answer more questions, but I want you to walk away with at least understanding where are some buckets that you can go to, some seeds to plant. The first one, in terms of the primary prevention, again, is the Partnership for Sustainable Communities. It's a huge initiative established by President Obama in June of 2009 to try to, first of all, bridge silos. Let's get HUD, Housing and Urban Development, Department of Transportation, and EPA all working together on transportation choices, on housing choices, and let's build our communities considering all of the various implications so that they are going to be healthy, they're not going to pollute, they're going to promote physical activity, they're going to do the really good things. The partnership, what's really interesting is, well, it's first of all, it's based on some livability principles. I'm not going to go through each one, but solidly in these are the recognition that the communities who are bearing the burden of pollution, disease, poverty, and crime need to be beneficiaries of this effort. Example, you know, EPA's dollars are much less compared to HUD and DOT. Last month, HUD distributed $100 million for sustainable communities planning. Another presidential activity last month was a joint HUD and DOT funding for sustainable communities, gave 62 communities, I think, $75 million. So again, it's a really important source of funding and capacity in all the areas that I mentioned. The commitment of the Partnership to Environmental Justice is documented in the fact that they did create a Team EJ. And the purpose of Team EJ is to make sure that environmental justice efforts do consider sustainability principles, because again, it's not about just solving and fixing the past, but also looking forward to the future, but also making sure that the partnership activities consider environmental justice. And we're in the process of producing what we call a resource reference guide, which will have the laundry list of capacity, training, technical assistance, funding. Who are the people in these agencies that you can go to address environmental justice and the intersection of sustainability? So that should be available in the very near future. But like I said, it's an important opportunity. Pay more attention to it. In the back, I have a fact sheet on the partnership. Working really quickly through this, we have Plan EJ 2014. It's EPA's commitment to addressing environmental justice in all parts of the agency. It's designed to protect the health in the communities. It's designed to empower communities. It's designed to promote partnerships. There's five different areas, again, offering policy opportunities and also community-specific place-based activities. We've got the community action area where they're trying to align all of the capacity building programs in the agency so they can be more effective. Moving into tertiary prevention, huge opportunities under the brownfields arena. One of the categories relates to programs definitely within the brownfields program. Recently, I believe, you know, 54, I believe, or several area-wide planning grants were recently given so that disadvantaged communities have the opportunity to think about what they want from contaminated areas, things dealing with community gardens, urban agriculture, a lot of opportunities within the brownfields arena. Check into that. Another important, you said five, he said two. I'm going to negotiate here, because I was going pretty fast. One, he said one. All right. Okay, this is the biggest, exciting, most exciting news here. Under the Affordable Health Care Act, $11 billion on the table going to community health centers. Wonderful partnership to have community health centers put in communities with pollution and disease and poverty and crime. We're trying to access those dollars and make them available to communities. Also trying to bring in the partnership aspect of this. So again, like I said, this is a real rush through job, but thinking in terms of the community health. This particular slide will help you understand the Affordable Care Act. Can't go into detail here. Michael Duane is in the audience, is an expert in this arena, so he can talk to you about it. But it's about community health, it's about the infrastructure, about research, and so on and so forth. Didn't want to leave you just with the theory. Here's a map showing place-based efforts, some of them directly related to environmental justice, some of them related to other types of community activities, such as urban waters, climate showcase. But we're really trying to take the work out of Washington right into place-based activities. And always and foremost, our Office of Environmental Justice continues to have funding through our small grants program. There will be another announcement coming out later this month, $25,000 per community, still very important. Our office has recently initiated some grants for the Gulf Coast area with the BP spill and another number of other opportunities. So again, our office is still there, still working hard on a very immediate basis. And then I'll just conclude again with some of the first words out of Administrator Jackson's mouth when she hit the agency, and saying that environmental justice is not an issue we can afford to relegate to the margins. we need to factor into every decision we make. She's asked all of the staff to be bold in our activities, and we continue to try to do that. And we do this because we're inspired by the work that you're doing every day on a direct community level basis. So thank you for your time, and we'll be available for follow-up questions now.
Right now.
Okay, good. Do we have any questions? Yes, Ross.
Excuse me, kind of a cosmic question that I don't expect you to answer now, but it might be a topic fodder for discussion. How does all this stuff that you wear, the light that's happening, how does EPA, and in particular the regional offices, get the states to make most of the on-the-ground environmental decisions, regulatory decisions? How do you get the states to buy it?
Okay. It's an excellent question, and Ross asked, how do we translate the federal interest and initiative and power behind environmental justice to the state level? Actually, I could point you to the Plan EJ 2014. It's the recognition that 90% of the decisions on particular types of facilities are at the state level, and we're starting to wrap in that question. Our office is the Office of Enforcement Compliance Assurance, and state compliance is an important issue. So it's a very real concrete issue. We don't have the final answer, but we've got the commitment to explore that in terms of working with the states to make sure they understand how they can do environmental justice and what's important. So it's a great question, and it's right on target.